It is June 19th, 2012. It is 1 o'clock on the West Coast. It is Hug Nation time all over the world. If you are listening to the archive, the time and space is irrelevant. The vibration is all important. Thank you for adding your vibration, your energy, your intention to Hug Nation in this now moment, whenever you are experiencing it. Wanted to do something a little different before we do our opening mindfulness. I wanted to just share a quote that I read from Ralph Waldo Emerson, which, tell me if you think it sounds like what we say during the opening mindfulness. "We lie in the lap of immense intelligence, which makes us receivers of its truth and organs of its activity. When we discern justice, when we discern truth, we do nothing of ourselves, but allow a passage to its beams." So, let's just take a deep breath and allow truth, justice, and love to flow through us. Allow us to be receivers. Allow us to settle into the natural, perfect cycles and vibrations of this universe. And as we surrender to this now, as we steer less and float more, let us become agents of the divine. Allow us to be tools of the universe. Fill us with joy and love so we may spread love and joy in the world. Amen. Welcome! Welcome, welcome, welcome! Well, this week is going to be a little bit more of a stream of consciousness week in terms of the topic. The topic is... I don't think I had a good title for it. Something about the natural world and the digital world and natural life and the digital world. So a bunch of things happened in the last few days that have hammered home thoughts about the physical world, about nature, and kind of showing me the difference, the contrast between the digital world that I spend so much time in. So to take a few days back, so I actually spent the weekend camping in Northern California at a festival called The Bounce. And it took place in this beautiful setting. But to get there, I had to fly and then go camping. And so it's the first time I've ever done that. So I had to really strip down what I was going to bring. And so one non-critical thing was my laptop. I normally don't travel without my laptop. I decided, okay, let's just go crazy. Let it go. And bring books. And a cell phone, of course, but I don't like to use the computer through a cell phone. Anyway. Still, it's kind of like having a leash or it's not a full surrender to being offline. So, went to the woods, marveled in the nature, was reading along the way, and that in of itself was full of powerful experiences of just being in nature, of feeling nature, of noticing the fractals and ferns, noticing the river, feeling the way it feels when you're around a dense life of nature. But the universe just kept giving me more and more reminders of this contrast. Kind of came home and had a picnic in the yard with Bee, and then discovered that my internet was down, so spent the day yesterday kind of connecting with her physically, being present, not being called constantly to check on the online world that I feel so connected to. And you know what? I'll say it. Addicted to. It's an interesting place for me to get to where I'm being critical of online life. You know, I, for many years, was about as vocal a advocate of the internet as a tool for spreading love, for connecting, for finding ourselves. And I still think that stuff is true. I mean, I still think that the very process of committing to sharing your life online, which we so many of us do now through the most basic of tools like Facebook. We are live streaming. We are telling our story. We are telling our biography, our autobiography as it's happening. There was a time when that was considered a very arrogant thing to do, and when I was sharing so much of my life, I was a target for a lot of, why should we care? But it's less about why you should care. The process of sharing online, keeping a homepage, a blog, a diary, Facebook, to me it's less about making you know what I'm doing and more shifting the mindset so that I am telling my story. I'm a protagonist. I am out there in the world, and by telling my story, it forces you into a more active role as opposed to a passive role. If you are simply consuming the world, you don't have much to share. If you are a character in the story, and even if you just know as you're sharing things, it reminds you that you're a character in the story. It makes you say yes to more things. It makes you get more engaged. And while I still think that is true, I'm also aware of how dangerous or damaging or potentially unhealthy the depth of digital life that we're getting into can be. And I'll be the first to admit that I'm experiencing this. I'm feeling so connected to a digital life that I'm spending huge amounts of my life connected to a computer, interacting with people through a computer, through a terminal, through many people, divisions removed from an actual physical connection. And, people often talk about the phrase, nobody on their deathbed wishes they spent more time at the office. And I think we all agree on that. But I think that phrase is kind of outdated. We all know that to be true, of course. Nobody would say they would wish they spent more time at the office. But I think the new version of that is that no one is going to be on their deathbed and wish they spent more time online, or on Facebook, or updating their Twitter, or their Pinterest, or whatever. It's equally as removed an experience of the world as, getting caught up in the game of the office and of commerce. Actually, maybe it's not as equal, but it's significant. There is a story in Zen and the Art of Motorcycle Maintenance, and I read this probably 20 years ago, so this may not be in the story, but this is what I remember. There's a time when a character is explaining why on his walls he has only original art, no prints. You won't see a Matisse print or a Van Gogh print, only paintings by artists where you can see the strokes. And he explains that the reason for that is because a print is not art. A print is a picture of art. You can appreciate the beauty of the art, but you're not experiencing the art. You're not getting the energy of the art. You're not feeling the artist in the same way that you would if you were in front of their work. And that really hit me hard. And I actually, took my Matisse prints down and instead sought out original art. And only recently did it occur to me that the online experience of the world is very similar. An online interaction, an online experience of a gathering, an online appreciation of, an event through photos, even an online hug. That's not a hug. It's a picture of a hug. And again, you can retain and get some of the experience. You can get some of the energy of it, but it's not the same. And the danger comes because we get tricked into thinking that it is. And it feels enough of the same that you feel like, well, I don't need as much of the real interactions, the real physical experience of the world, of nature, of whatever it is. It's like taking your family to Vegas and feeling like, okay, we saw, Paris with the little pretend Paris, we saw a little pretend Egypt, at the Luxor. We saw a little pretend San Francisco. So, you know, it's kind of the same, right? I feel like I've treated my family to a world travel experience. Good enough. And you maybe lose the need or the thirst for true travel because you get enough of it through that Vegas experience. But I think you'd be pretty insane to say that visiting the Luxor is the same thing as visiting Cairo. And the same is true with, you know, if I look at a gallery of someone's visit to the Grand Canyon, it's clearly not the same thing as going to the Grand Canyon. And reaching out to someone and telling them that I care about them is not the same thing as looking in their eyes. I mean, I know that I've been speaking into a webcam for a long time, and I can get pretty good at feeling you and connecting and feeling that I am depositing that energy into this digital place, that then when you receive it, you're pulling a little bit of that energy out. But it's not the same. And I'm saying this for myself because I am finding myself that there it is enough, it is good enough, it is a warm enough feeling that I'm letting it take more and more and more of my life. Maybe take is an aggressive word, but it's sometimes, because I'm in control, I have the choice, but there's so much wonderful things, so many good, easy to get to connections through this terminal that I go there instantly. I go there first. And it's not just connections, it's also entertainment. It's also, you know, stimulus. So as I get stuck in some mental place where I should or want to be writing, as I get stuck, I have to fight hard the instinct to go check on one of the infinite number of entertaining things that are available to me in the digital world. Now, if I would go outside and walk in the yard, I would feel better about myself. If I would go to a yoga class and integrate with my body, if I would go into the other room and hug my girlfriend, that would be different. But what I'm doing is simply going to the lowest hanging fruit as far as feeling some stimulation or some entertainment. And I'm feeling that it's a problem. It is the barrier for the next levels of my growth. And I think now, you know, if I stay at this pace, if I live to be an old man, I will look back and wish that I spent less time on the computer. It's hard for me because I don't want to go cold turkey. I don't want to remove the computer because it is such an incredible tool. This experience right now, this recalibration that I do once a week in this Hug Nation is an incredibly beneficial experience for me. It fills me with the energy that then gives me the incentive to go and grow and be a more connected, more loving person in the world. But that's only a couple hours a week. And I would guess I spend probably more than that posting to Facebook, checking on updates, clicking on links at the expense of living in the world. I'm enjoying a picture of the world. And it feels good enough that I'm not getting out into the world. I'm not meeting my neighbors. So, I'm trying to be as aware as possible, trying to work more discipline into my life, to wean myself, to find the balance, because there is so much wonderful things about this tool. And it is just a tool. It's neither good nor bad. It's only problematic when I lose control of it and it becomes what I go to anytime there is an obstacle. If I hit any sort of obstacle, go to the easy route, which is the computer. So I'm trying to force myself to go to pen and paper, go to physical interaction, go to a phone call, go to a walk around the block, go outside. Because being a human being is a physical experience. We are matter. We are matter that houses consciousness. But It would be a travesty to neglect the human, the physical experience of being human, and to get solely into the intellect, solely into the terminal, solely into this, and lose the magic of a physical experience in this incredible planet. Consciousness has chosen to manifest in these human forms with all of the sensation, all of this vibrancy, all of this actual energy that exists in the vibrations of the plants and the animals and the surfaces and the light that's everywhere. And we are in the smack dab in the center of the most gorgeous, diverse planet that we've ever, you know, in all of our limited explorations has shown us. And we're in the middle of it. And yet, this technology dilemma, you know, there's that thing in The Matrix, when they learn Kung Fu, just like plugging it in. And like, that sounds super romantic and super cool and save you so much time. It's taken us off track of what it means to be a human being and to experience. We're here to experience. We're here to have the gift of highs and lows and textures and hot and cold and all of it. And if we then say, oh, all I really need to do is absorb it through a terminal, we may think that is life, but it is a picture of life. And I'm saying this to hold myself and inviting you to remind one another to find that balance, to take it from an online life to an online tool that helps us to experience life. I recognize the irony as I say this, speaking to you through this digital tool. But maybe it's not ironic, maybe it's poetic. And we can use this tool as an aid in finding that balance in our heart and our mind and the world outside and the world inside, in that sweet spot of growth and experience and connection. So let's grab ourselves by the shoulders, our physical selves, and through intention, connect to everyone else who is doing so in this time and space or whenever they are hearing this, and recognize that even as we use these terminals and tools, they are simply tools to remind us of a connection that is far deeper, far more ageless. And as we sink into that connection and we feel part of a one, an ocean that we are a drop in, we are a wave in an ocean, unseparated. So let's sink into that and feel that and take three deep breaths together. In through the nose, out through the mouth. Breathe in love. Share it with the world. Breathe in love. Share it with the world. The physical air going in and out of us, breaking that barrier between our skin surface and the world around us, reminding us that we are all connected. We are all part of one massive thing, allowing this individual human perspective to be witness as well as participant, as well as absolutely integrated. On behalf of Grandpa Caleb and all the love warriors, happy Hug Nation. Thank you for the reflection, for the reminder. I love you. Namaste. Brady asks, if life is like the Matrix and just a simulation, then what we call life is just like reading a book and not experiencing true existence. Well, I think that we're talking about multiple levels of awareness. You know, I think that I think divine consciousness is true existence. I think human consciousness is also true existence. The part that I'm trying to address is that what is human experience what is its purpose? What is its intention? How is it supposed to be? You know, is I don't think we're meant to survive. I don't think we're meant. I don't think that's the purpose. I don't think the purpose is to conquer. I think the purpose is to experience and to learn and to grow and to face our challenges and overcome our fears. The way that I heard Yogananda say it is that we are to overcome our nature. I saw the moment that I decided to stop eating all meat was I was reading a Gandhi autobiography, and he was saying that there's nothing wrong with eating meat. It's perfectly within the natural cycles. Tons of animals eat the flesh of other animals. And if you want to be within nature, totally cool. Nothing wrong with that. But we have a gift as human beings, as our consciousness allows us to actually step out, overcome our nature, to actually make a choice based on compassion, not survival, not our natural instincts. And when we take those steps, make those choices, that's that freedom, that's that free will. We can succumb to all of our instincts and our desires, or we can try to align our actions and our thoughts more in tune with not the natural order, but the divine order, the divine flow. And so for me, that was, I no longer want to contribute to suffering by eating the flesh of another animal. And, you know, more and more, my choices try to get more in line with what I believe to be alignment with a more divine flow. And that is why I'm here. That's why I'm having this consciousness. That's why I have this individual experience of this body in this time, in this environment, is to give me the ability, the opportunity to be challenged, to have the lessons smack me in the head over and over and over again until I finally go, all right, I think I'm good on that for a while. What's next? Until I forget, and then I get reminded again with a challenge, with an to the point that eventually that flow feels so strong that being in the flow itself becomes the reward. Like we talked about last week, that the high road becomes its own reward. You stop craving the accomplishments or the toys or the dollar signs or the accolades to make you feel good, and instead feel like, I am in this higher vibration state. I am acting from this higher place, and that is the reward that I've been craving all along, and it's deep, and it's prolonged, and I'm there as long as I continue on this path, as opposed to getting a new toy until you're bored with it. So, part of the reason why we gather once a week here is to kind of be reminded of that, of whatever it is that each of us feels is our more divine path. Because what that is for me may not be that for you. And what is the sweet spot for you may not be for you. It's all about figuring out where it feels good. Because I think that is your compass. Abraham speaks about that. Bashar speaks about that. That feeling of excitement, that feeling of joy. I even, you know, make the point that I mean, I guess I'm not a scholar, but someone was telling me about Ayn Rand believing that, you know, if we strip away all of our societies, you know, forcing us to do good for one another, legislating us to do good, that we would actually sink into that place that we talk about here of feeling like, oh my gosh, it feels great to help people. If you stop telling me I have to, that's what I will eventually want to do, because that is the easiest, best way to make myself feel better and more happy and joyous in the world, more in that divine flow. And that then becomes this selfish act. Not selfish in the sense of I want to take care of myself over you, selfish in the sense that this is the terminal I have to interact with the world. This is the instrument panel. This is the ship I have. And so, if I get this ship in on its track that has been set by this cosmos, in the same way that every plant and every animal and every cell is kind of as a part of some system, if I can get myself into that system of flow selfishly, I will be feel good because that's how my instrument panel will tell me that I'm on track, and then I will be a benefit to the whole. Whereas if I try to benefit the whole, I'm doing so from a very limited ego mental state, a cerebral perspective that is just so stunted in the spectrum of the cosmos. I mean, how could I possibly know? Every tyrant, every person who is slaughtered and assassinated, every one of those people has thought that they were doing what they thought was the right thing for this moment. Surrendering to the cosmic flow, I don't think those choices can be made. Which is why, to go back to today's theme, why returning to nature is so important. Because whether we hear it or not, nature is a representative of the grand classroom of that flow, of that harmony, of those patterns, of the cycles. And taking that as our instructor, as opposed to a ego voice, that's the healing of our minds and the healing of the planet and the healing of all. Not that it's wrong, because there is nothing, you can't be wrong. Everything in the system plays its role. Even a tyrant plays the role of someone for a hero to learn the lesson and overcome, or learn the lesson of humility, or learn the lesson you need to have evil men. You need to have obstacles. You need to have storms. Our job is to get selfish and figure out what our role, natural role, overcoming our nature to be in flow might be. I'm not sure if this is making any sense. I think what I need to do is stop talking and get outside. Start looking at some leaves. Start counting some clouds. Start looking into the eyes of people like you. And remembering that it's all perfect and divine and magical. And being in awe of it all and simply receiving the gift of this experience is what it's all about. So thank you for being such an amazing teacher, for being such an amazing student, for reflecting the magic to everyone as you walk your walk.
Thank you. I love you. Namaste.
This is Love More, Fear Less, available at lovemorefearless.com. I'm a little biased, but I think it's a fantastic read. It's lots of little essays. It's great for the bathroom. So this is page 55, Nature as Sacred Text. I've been devouring science documentaries. To me, studies of the natural world are better tools for studying God than sacred texts. A sacred text is a man's attempt to put the inexpressible into words. Often those words are then translated. Sometimes the original words are even passed down several times before they make it into print. Language is an amazing tool, but it is merely a tool. Remember in high school when your writing professor would repeat the mantra, show, don't tell? Don't tell me the flower is pretty. Show me its beauty. Describe the colors and patterns and the play of the light. But even the greatest poet could not accurately convey the baffling beauty of an orchid. Joyce Kilmer wrote long ago, I think that I shall never see a poem lovely as a tree. And this is the trouble with sacred words. They are all essentially poems about trees. I don't mean to argue their truth or value, only to point out the obvious limitation of words. After reading a particularly vivid account of an experience, say surviving the Katrina floods, you might feel as though you had been there. But it would be incredibly naive to believe that you had the same experience as someone who is neck deep in water and fear. Could you ever read enough about giving birth to reach an understanding of what that experience is like, or having sex? To me, studying science on a very surface level is not about understanding. I have no goal of learning the details of fusion or the intricacies of photosynthesis. Instead, the basic knowledge serves to pulverize into mush any lingering need my brain has of making sense of it all. Understanding how it all works is impossible and stressful. Surrendering to the infinitely complex order, that's calming and peaceful. This is particularly helpful if you combine micro and macro learning, from microscope to telescope, from distant galaxy to inside my body. No matter how far my attention goes in any direction, it never stops uncovering incomprehensible levels of chaos, order, drama, and interconnectedness. The human drama, with its adultery, career paths, and invention, is no more complicated or important than the drama of a marshland biosphere or a distant pulsar. The universe is fractally amazing. The more I watch Cosmos or the Discovery Channel, the more giddy I become with awe. It seems to me that this awe and appreciation is immensely more important than understanding. I can enjoy a roller coaster without understanding the physics. I just have faith that the track is constructed in such a way that it supports the speed, gravity, and torque of the ride. I could read a book about how the ride should be ridden. I could follow the exact steps a legendary rider of the past took. Commandment 4, thou shalt not eat multiple corn dogs before riding. Commandment 5, thou shalt be taller than this sign. Commandment 6, on the Sabbath, lines are longer, so try to go midweek, etc. The rules and descriptions can certainly be helpful, but they must be understood in their place. Too many people are reading the rules as they are riding, so focused on the abstract that they are not enjoying the actual experience. It may sound trite to suggest to someone that they stop to smell the flowers, but on the contrary, this is profound spiritual guidance. For me, the natural world holds direct glimpses into the divine. Like a more literal, biblical God, it is something I can look directly at. It is not something I can look directly at. It is simply too much for me to comprehend. But in every veined leaf, I see the reflection of this divine order. The ego wills of humans, my own included, disintegrate into comical naivete. In a universe so overwhelmingly miraculous, I have been given the ability to perceive it. My purpose is no more or less grandiose than any other piece of the cosmic puzzle, whether massive star or tiny atom. But what is significant, more so than anything else that defines my existence, is that I am able to perceive and ponder this miracle as it unfolds. It is a unique human gift, and our appreciation of this gift defines our life and our relationships with all other life. Of course, it is pretty ridiculous to try to explain all of this with words. I think that I shall never see. Dot, dot, dot.